This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Howdy, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Lexington, Kentucky, and you're listening to a special episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for September 21st, 2011, episode 233. Good morning, Horse World. Well, as you know by now, Jamie, Jennifer, and I are on vacation this week, and we'll be back live Monday the 26th. We hope that you are enjoying the special programming that we are bringing to you this week. On May the 10th, we had one of the most popular guests we've ever had on Horses in the Morning, the former coachman to the Duke of Edinburgh, that'd be the Queen's husband, David Saunders. He was the royal coachman. It was the most downloaded episode that we have done to date. And Dr. Wendy Ying and I had an opportunity on the Driving Radio Show to have David Saunders as our first guest and to spend a lot more time with him and go a little deeper into his life. We have that interview in its entirety for you this morning. David Saunders has led an extraordinary life, and we think that you will enjoy this a lot. This is taken from episode 2 and 3 of the Driving Radio Show and is brought to you by FeedXL. FeedXL is the place you go if you want to find out if you're feeding your horses properly, if you're putting the right stuff into your horse's mouth, whether that be grain or hay or supplements of any kind, vitamins, all of that is taken into account. All you do is go to FeedXL.com, plug in a little information about your horse, plug in a little information about what you feed your horse. Only takes a couple minutes, and it spits out some detailed reports. It has over 3,000 different feeds in there, so it can break them down by nutritional value and all of that. And it's all printed out for you, so you know if your horse is lacking in a certain vitamin or mineral or getting too much of a certain thing. It's going to tell you exactly what you should be doing with your horse. It's a neat program. If you haven't tried it yet, you should give it a try and put all your horses in there and find out it, because they all have kind of their own unique needs, and FeedXL takes that into account. It'll only take you a couple minutes to find out if you're feeding your horses correctly. That's FeedXL.com. Well, enjoy today's episode with this fascinating interview with David Saunders. He led an extraordinary life, and we think that you're going to enjoy it. Also, we will be back again tomorrow morning with another fun episode of Horses in the Morning. Have a great day, everybody. Well, now it's time for our big guest, David Saunders. I only know him because we had him on at an interview one time on the morning show and had a great time with him. I just liked him instantly. But you've known him for a while, haven't you?
Oh, yes. I've known David since I started driving. He's actually one of the people that helped me a lot when I first started out. And he's also one of our FEI stewards in the sport. So I see him a lot at shows. And he's also a fellow four-in-hand driver.
You know, he has worked for, he has done a number of things, but we talked about earlier, he's worked for the royal family for like 20 years. He told us on the morning show how he actually got that job. It was kind of a funny story. And he told, one of the things I remember, and you listened to that interview, is he actually, I asked him, and I thought I was just being silly. I said, have you ever driven the royal family on Christmas Day on a carriage drive? And I thought I was being silly, but he had, and it was one of his most special memories.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of cool. How cool
David
is that?
Who gets to I do know. That? He has so many stories. It's unbelievable. I mean, we could talk to him for, you know, 10 shows.
Now, he's been
a wonderful
driver too, though, right?
Oh, yes. He has represented the USET with pairs and four in hands for many years. And then also he was one of the drivers at the WEG. Unfortunately, he had a lameness issue, but he was one of the top contenders going into the WEG for the Americans, driving a four in hand of Morgan's.
When did all that happen?
Well, he's from England, of course. He has a British accent.
He competed for the United States?
Yeah, because I think he moved here in the 90s and started working for Gloria Austin in Florida.
So he has a citizenship here, got dual citizenship or something at that point. We'll have to ask him that at some point.
We will. We'll have to ask him. I don't know how that all – that was before my time of driving. But I know that he – I think what happened was Gloria Austin hired him as her private coachman in the 90s, and then they started competing in CDEs.
Cool.
With her team of Warmbloods.
Well, let's just talk to him. This is David Saunders. This is part one of our interview with him, and we're going to have part two for you next week, and you're going to want to hear both parts because David's quite a character. Well, hi, David, and welcome to the first real driving radio show. We're so thrilled to have you as our first guest.
Well, hello, Glenn. How are you? And bonjour, mademoiselle.
Oh, bonjour.
And now I have to thank you for coming on. You were a guest on our morning radio show, on the live show we do called Horses in the Morning. You were one of the most popular guests we ever had. I had so many comments after that segment, and they were mostly good, David, by the way. I
just wanted to thank you. Because I'm used to bad things being said about me. I can handle
That's
bad
not
things.
True.
It's the good things I really struggle with, so...
Well, then I was afraid that, you know, having Wendy as the co-host, that you were going to say, no, I don't want to be on there. But you actually were excited about it.
No. Wendy and I have been friends for quite some time, I think, Wendy, haven't we? We've kind of helped
each
other.
Since I started driving, yes. You were one of the first people that helped me when I started driving.
That's right. And Wendy was one of the select few that tried for the WEG and did very well, and so she has the extra honor of being an actual four-in-hand driver, which I think adds a lot of kudos to it.
I think so, too, and I've got to see her do that, and it's an exciting sight to see her out there, all 5'2" of her driving
Absolutely.
Four horses.
Absolutely.
David, when we talked to you last, we talked all about, on the last show there at Horses in the Morning, we talked all about your years at the Royal Mews and working for royalty. Then you had something coming up that you were very excited about. Tell us what that was, because it's happened now, and you can tell us about it.
Well, I worked for the Queen ostensibly. I worked for the government, actually, for the Crown. So I worked for the Queen, but the Queen kind of lent me out to her husband, His Royal Highness the Duke of Edinburgh. I worked for him for 20 years.
And that's Prince Philip, right?
Prince Philip, yeah, His Royal Highness Prince Philip. And 10 years ago, I went to Prince Philip's 80th birthday, and this year I went to his 90th birthday, because these royals live a long time.
I was just going to say, he doesn't seem 90, he's still pretty perky.
Well, of course, you know, it's good to be a blue blood. It's good to be a king. It's good to be a prince. And because you can live a long time if you're taken well care of. No, but he's very active. And I was looking for a date for the party. And I don't know how it happened. I was talking to Gloria, and I said to Gloria, "Would you like to come?" And she said, "With you?" I said, "Yes." And with Gloria's
Now, who's
Gloria? Oh, Gloria Austin, I should say. Sorry, Gloria Austin, yes, from the she has a resort. It's called the Grand Oaks Resort now. And she has a wonderful collection of carriages, which I, luckily enough, I've known her for a long time, and I helped her buy quite a few of the carriages.
Is that the one in Ocala, Florida?
Well, it's just outside. It's actually Lady Lake, or is it Weirsdale? I can't remember. It's just outside.
I think it's Weirsdale.
That's right, yeah. Well, I helped Gloria several years ago and bought quite a few horses for her. I bought some Cladruby horses for her, some big grey Cladruby horses from Czech Republic, and I bought quite a few Frisians for her. And when she was collecting European carriages, because of my contacts here in Europe, I found quite a few European pieces for her. So I asked her if she'd be my date, and she agreed to come. And she came over for a week, and we had a great week together in England, starting off with going to Prince Philip's birthday party, which was a wonderful okay. – obviously, he had a lot of birthday
parties. First date, by the way, I want to add.
Yes, I know. And can you make sure all your other lady listeners are paying attention to this? I do good dates, so –
David, I can tell you there are many lady listeners who followed your date all the way through Facebook, because Gloria had it all on her Facebook, and there was a large group of us following you, wishing we were her.
Well, what we did was that was kind of the start, the birthday party. We and Gloria and I are very precise, and we like to organize things. So actually, the afternoon before, we reconnoitred the place. We drove over to Cowarth Park, where the party was, and we drove in there and made sure where it was, found a place where we were going to park that night, and timed how long it was going to take us to get there from the hotel. we arrived, and the first person we bumped into was young George Bowman, George Bowman Jr., and his date, and George Sr. couldn't make it.
Who are they?
Well, the Bowman family are... there's probably five or six of them that are mostly four-in-hand drivers that have been driving quite a long time in England. I think a lot
and
of
wasn't
list-
George Bowman was the oldest four-in-hand driver for a while, wasn't he?
That's right. And he actually, if those of you that were at the WEG, he drove Misty Wrigley's coaching team and did the demo for the dressage before.
Oh,
the
I saw that. Yep.
And but anyway, we met and gathered, and these were all his driving friends, his equestrian friends. So there was lots of fellow drivers there, and chit chat. And then we went down to this marquee by the polo fields, and there was a cocktail party. Prince Philip arrived in his Land Rover and started mingling with people, which was very nice. And we watched a polo match, and we watched a driving demonstration by the coaching club, the London Coaching Club. And there was a demonstration of two of the carriages that Prince Philip used in the early days, because you have to remember, 20 odd years ago when we started this sport, everyone just used normal carriages, and of course the carriages used to fall to bits because they couldn't stand up to the strain. So
if you finished on four wheels, you won.
Actually, if you finished at all, you were probably a winner. So but in them days, it was a gentleman's sport for gentlemen. I'm not saying they're not gentlemen now, but there's a lot of professionals amongst it now. There's a lot of money involved. So but in them days, it was for gentlemen drivers, and it was true in America as well in the early days. People like Frolic Weymouth and people like that drove antique carriages and set off on the marathon with them. But anyway, there was a demonstration of that, and His Royal Highness made his way around the crowd and said hello to everybody and chit-chatted to everybody. And I said to Gloria, stay with me because His Royal Highness will come and talk to me. The moment he came over to me, someone had taken her away to talk to her. I think John Richards had taken her away to chat to her about something or show her something. And Gloria came back and said, have you seen him yet? I said, oh, yes, he just came over and said hello. Oh, damn, she said, I missed him. But what was actually fascinating was we were told that Her Majesty was coming, the Queen. And, of course, when the Queen's in the house, everybody knows the Queen's there, so due reverence is given to her, and she's the Queen, obviously, so she's the most important person in the room. So being the Queen and knowing that it was his due, she actually didn't turn up for the reception. What happened is that people came round and said, would we make our way up to the marquee? And they'd put up this wonderful marquee, this tent, and so we all sat at tables of eight people, and the tables were named after driving competitions that Prince Philip had competed at, Sandringham, Lowther, different places like that. And unlike in America, where you kind of, it's like a bun fight, everyone kind of sits where they want to sit, there you were given places to sit. There was cards, and you had to sit in certain places. Well, there was no head table, so I thought, I wonder how this is going to work. So we all came in and kind of stood there waiting, and then it got very quiet, and in came His Royal Highness and the Queen. The Queen sat at one table, the Royal Windsor Horse Show, and Prince Philip sat at the Sandringham table, which is another competition, and it's another place that the Queen owns, Sandringham House. And we had a wonderful dinner and chit chat, and then the speeches and the thank yous, and we'd had a collection for a present, and they presented him with a cigar box, a silver cigar box that was made in 1941, which I think was the year of his birth. So
I was going to say, what do you get the prince for a gift? You know.
Well, yes, that's that is kind of the problem. But you know, the present was really not. We had to get him something, but I think the present really was all his colleagues and former driving friends were all there, and he got to kind of have dinner with them. And but it was fascinating because the Queen was just there. I mean, obviously, the first thing was, and as you may or may not know, in England, the first thing we do is stand up and the first toast is to the Queen. And so we toasted the Queen, and we toasted Prince Philip. And
do they still say long live the Queen, by the way?
Oh, absolutely, yeah, because having worked for the Queen for 20 years, there's an interesting clause in our contract. It's called the demise of the monarch. And the demise of the monarch is when the King or the Queen dies and everybody loses their job.
Is that right?
Just automatically fired.
Everybody loses their job. I mean, most people nowadays, everyone is, it's reinstated again, but you have to remember, it's like with presidents in America, you don't want the staff of the last president in, right. You want to bring your own staff
that's
in.
True, yeah.
And that's kind of how it works. But so saying long live the king is a pretty good way of keeping your job, you know?
I never noticed the selfish part of that before.
Oh, yes, absolutely. You know, the British are nothing if
that
they're
not selfish. That puts a whole new spin on it.
That's right, absolutely.
That's funny. I never knew that. So you had a good time at the party.
Oh, yes, it was beautiful, beautiful dinner. Gloria was a little bit miffed because they kind of served the gentlemen before the ladies. Now, I don't know quite what that was all about because that's very unusual. I don't know. I think that was just a mistake in the catering because that shouldn't have been done that way. But it was a very good do. And what was more fun was the rest of the time with Gloria because we went to I said, "Would you like to go to America?" And she said, "What do you mean? I've just come from America." I said, "Well, about 2 miles up the road is Runnymede. And Runnymede is where the Magna Carta was signed. And the Magna Carta is kind of like your Bill of Rights. And right next to it is the JFK Memorial. There's an acre of ground that was given by the British government to the American people. And it's the JFK Memorial, and it's an acre of land which belongs to America, which is in England." And so I took her there. And where else did we go? We went to Stonehenge. She wanted to see Stonehenge. And
You also go to Warhorse? You went back backstage at Warhorse, right?
Yes.
Did you?
Yes. Gloria wanted to present this award to the producers of Warhorse. So Gloria sat where, because the Queen had been 3 weeks beforehand, and Gloria sat where the Queen had sat, and I sat where Prince Philip sat. So we had a really good time. And
I got to ask you about that now. Okay, yeah, so because we've talked about this quite a bit, the Warhorse play we're talking about, that has now come to America. It's in England and America. And the people who have seen it that are horse people were as thrilled about it as people who have seen it who aren't horse people, about the movements of the horse. And, of course, the horse is operated by four people. It's a puppet. Were you as enthralled with the horse? You forget there's even people there.
Absolutely. When you first see it, you see the people. But after you get into the story, you kind of – it's kind of like watching – and a Walt Disney movie, you know, the 101 Dalmatians or something like that. In the end, they're dogs. And Cruella de Vil is, you know, they're real people. It's fascinating. But after the show, we were invited backstage, well, on stage when everyone left, and the guys came out, these young, fit boys that produce these, because they actually carry someone on their back. Gloria posted quite a few pictures of it on Facebook. You should have a look at the pictures. But it was actually a wonderful story that was adapted from a book about this horse called Joey that was taken to war. And, you know, the truth behind it is there were several million horses killed during the First World War. And people don't realize that, you know, the horses, they didn't know which side of the fence they were on. This horse was ridden by a British officer and then was ridden by a German officer. And it was on both sides of the war. It was fascinating. Absolutely fascinating story. I recommend everyone go and see it.
Well, David, what are you doing now? You're in Belgium, is that correct?
Yes, I'm with some of your people might know Henk van der Wiel. He's a harness maker from Belgium, and I stay with him mostly during the summer. But I've been doing some different type of driving. It's called attelage traditionnel, which is traditional driving. It's the French form of driving, where we do – there's three parts to it. There's a presentation, and then there's a routier, which is like a marathon. You do 16, 17 kilometers, and there are four or five what they call PCs, which are like the hazards. But the hazards are you drive to a table, you pick up a glass of champagne – drink it. The horses have to stand still.
Do they get the drink too?
No. The horses have to stand still.
No, you have to. You can't spill your champagne, right?
Yeah. The driver drinks the champagne and then walks.
Can I sign up for this one?
Yeah. I put a little snippet on Facebook. If anyone's interested, they can have a look. And you drive across a red carpet, and you have to stop and back up. But it's all done with traditional carriages and with presentation harness, with people in lovely hats and dressed up.
This must have reminded you of your days at the Royal Mews.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, Glenn, I'll set some champagne table up for your next lesson. And
yeah,
we
should. That'd be great. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
And David, what aren't you driving the Marin's horses there also in Belgium?
Yes, I've been working with a client, Paul and Eric de Meurter. They're near Brussels, and they have these Marin's horses, and I'd never heard of them. They come from the Pyrenees in France, and they're kind of like a big black cob. You'll have to Google them, everyone, and look at them. But they're kind of like
the Dales ponies, are they not? They're kind of like Fells and Dales.
That's right, but a little bit bigger with not quite so much feather. But they come from the Pyrenees, and they were an endangered species for quite some time. But they're really coming back on now. What I love about my job, and I'm sure everybody loves about it, is that there are as many different breeds to suit everybody. And as a professional, what the kick I get out of it, and you might agree or disagree with me, Wendy, is because you treat them as well, is how these different horses have different characters and different attributes and different qualities. And it's so much fun dealing with them all, because they're just so intriguing.
That's true. I mean, and there are some that I just don't like treating like minis, I'll say.
Now be careful.
But it's only because they bite me more often than, like, say, a draft horse.
Well,
a Chihuahua versus a German Shepherd or something.
well, Paul and Eric, with these Marin's horses, they have three stallions. And two of them are breeding stallions, and one hasn't bred yet. And we tried to put four together. We had two stallions in the wheel and a stallion and a gelding in the lead.
That sounds dangerous.
It worked quite well for about the first 30 minutes. And then we were going through this small town in just outside Brussels, and the leaders were going along beautifully. But picture the two-wheelers on their back legs wrestling each other, going down the road. And so we kind of had to rethink that whole program of putting too many stallions in the team. But anyway, it's still a challenge.
Now, what I remember about the Marins from, by the way, I kind of study breeds. We've talked a lot about breeds in the last 3 years on the Horse Radio Network, is that they're known for being calm and gentle. And if I remember correctly, they were used where you were located, or where they were located in France. It was very, very mountainous, and they were known for being very good at the hill work.
Absolutely. If people go and look at where they come from in the Pyrenees are, just to put it in perspective, between France and Spain. And there are a huge range of mountains that divide the two countries. And these horses can kind of live off of nothing, and they can walk up and down these huge mountains and walk back down again. And they were like the workhorses of the people that lived there, because kind of like the Dales and the Fell ponies, they were turned out. They were not wild, but they were kind of bred out on the mountains, as it were. And then they were brought in every year to be branded or to be, you know, bred with or whatever, and they're an all-round horse. They're used for ploughing, for driving, for riding. And we're taking two stallions in next month in August for a curring, and I've got to drive this stallion driven dressage. It has to be lunged, has to do a riding dressage, and it has to jump 8 cross-country jumps. So it's quite a tough curing.
Wow. And now, do they have bigger bones too and bigger feet?
Yes, they have really quite big feet and quite big bones, but it's kind of difficult to, they're kind of like a Dales or a Fell, but bigger and not quite so feathery in their heels.
Well, Glenn, you would love them.
I would. I like black horses. I'm very partial. Matter of fact, Jamie, my co-host on another show, says I'm biased and I'm bigoted because I like black horses. But I do. I mean, that's just always
I do, too.
I've got a black horse fetish. I don't care what size.
well, what's fascinating with people that drive is that a lot of harness is black with brass on or with white metal. And, of course, that really brings out the color of the black horses. I think it really does anyway.
Yeah,
that's true.
Definitely. I'm going to ask you a question that you may not want to answer. You've got the life now. You're doing pretty – I mean, what a deal you've got going.
Well, of course, if you talk to most people with horses is they'll tell you – I mean, there's people at the top make money, but most of us just make a living.
But you know what I meant by that is not necessarily financially. It's you're doing what you really want to do in some neat places in the world.
Absolutely. We did three weeks ago, we did the Route de Lorraine, which is run by the Private Driving Club, which is based in Belgium, but it's got members all around the world. Gloria's a member. It's restricted to 50 members, and every 2 years they have a drive. It's called the Route de Lorraine, and we drive from chateau to castle to chateau and have a coffee, sherry, champagne, picnic, and it's over 2 days, and we did that 2 weeks ago, and that was wonderful. There was 35 carriages.
All right, Wendy, next year when he's in Belgium, we have to go do the show live with him. I really like all that driving and drinking
they're
doing
over there. I think
that's
a good idea. We're going to need to see it firsthand so we can cover it fully.
Right. Well, next year it's going to be coaches. That 1 year it's for all sorts of carriages, and then next year, the other year, they have it just for four-in-hands and for coaches. And next year, Gloria is going to come over. So maybe what we can do is we could do it from her coach. We could do a live broadcast from a coach.
I like that. You know, that's never been done before. That'll be a first.
Well, you'll have to speak to Mrs. Gloria Austin because we can arrange it. It's not a problem. I think people would get a kick out of it.
You know, Wendy's going to want to take the wheel, don't you?
That's right. Well, I've never driven a coach though, Glenn. That's something completely different because driving a coach, you need someone to actually help you with the vehicle part. It's so heavy, wouldn't you say, David?
Well, yes, but if you can drive, you can drive. The difficulty with the coach is it is £2,000 empty, and then you put 12 people on it, and it's iron tires. It has a friction brake, so it's just like a piece of wood on the wheel.
And no delayed steering.
No, well, and the steering, worse than that, is only a quarter lock. So the pole only doesn't even go to 90 degrees. It goes to like 30 degrees, something like that.
So it doesn't turn the whole way?
No,
absolutely no.
Or you'd flip it. Yeah.
Well, because
in the old days you used to do combined driving with a coach, and they had to move the dressage arena because you couldn't do a 40-meter circle with a coach.
Well, in the early days, everything was done with coaches because it was done by ladies and gentlemen from the coaching club, and it was done with coaches, absolutely. But coaching is a whole other sphere. I mean, there are, you know, there's the New York Coaching Club. There's the Four in Hand Club, which I'm a member of. Are you a member, Wendy?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Yeah. We're members of the Four in Hand Club, which is...
people that want to drive with you have to have a four in hand, but you don't have to have a coach. So it's kind of a club for picnic driving people with four in hands. Because I do that in my dressage carriage.
Right, but I think the hub of the Four in Hand Club really is the non-competitiveness of it. It's not for competition. Basically, you just go places, kind of like the Route de Lorraine, and kind of like what we're doing over here in Europe. It's really for the pleasure of driving your horses/ponies, for the sheer pleasure of it to show off to other people.
And that's just like what I was telling you about, Wendy. I belong to the Red Rose Driving Club. Now, it wasn't four in hands. It could be anything. There were four and sixes there, actually. And But it was just for fun. I mean, we went out every weekend to a different place around the Pennsylvania, and we drove through towns and had picnics. It was a blast, actually.
It is fun. That's what's great about driving, because you take your friends and you go out and meet other people, and it always ends in a picnic.
And because you're driving a carriage and not riding your horse, you have more room to carry the bubbly and the good food.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and also to carry friends, because
right.
the nice thing about anything to do with carriage driving, whether it be what's going on at the moment, there's a big competition in Aachen, which isn't very far away. I think the USCT have got several teams there, vaulting, jumping. Chester Webber's there driving at Four in Hand. It's not just the driver. It's everybody. On the marathon, for instance, the timekeeper and the navigator are just as important as the driver during the pit stop on the marathon, getting everything ready for the dressage. Pleasure driving, it's not just about the driver. It's about the passengers. It's about the whole equipage, as they say in France. It's the whole turnout. So carriage driving is much more of a gregarious equine sport than, say, show jumping or dressage, because generally it's just about the rider. And this is about all of us.
And you can take non-riders with you. Like, you can't go on a trail ride with people that don't ride. So
absolutely.
Then someone who doesn't ride is maybe left behind. But this way, you can, if you have non-riding friends or family, they can still enjoy your horses with you. That's what I like about it.
Well, and the other thing I think as well is that what tends to happen a lot in Europe, people will buy ponies for their kids. And then, obviously, children, as they do, they grow up. And then what do they do with the ponies? They keep them as lawn ornaments, or they break them to drive, and they end up driving them. That's why a lot of people drive in Europe, because they're children's ponies or children's horses that have been outgrown, as it were.
Hey, David, now that we talked a little bit, you said – are you going to Aachen, or did you just say that Chester's driving in Aachen?
No, I'll be going tomorrow to watch the dressage tomorrow, because there's two dressage tests. Today there was a dressage test. Tomorrow there's another dressage test, which counts towards the competition. And then on Friday there's a cones competition for money. And today there was a dressage for money. I mean, there was 1,500 euros, which is like $2,000 prize money today.
Oh, I wish we had prize money.
Yeah. and then I'll probably go tomorrow, and I'll probably go Saturday to watch the marathon, because I've driven there actually a couple of times at Ark, and I drove once with Chester, actually. We were part of the American team. He drove a four and I drove a four. And I drove for Great Britain probably 15 years ago there. So I've driven there a couple of times, but it's a great show. But it's not just driving. As I say, it's everything. There's jumping, dressage, vaulting, reining, everything.
And speaking of combined driving, now, David, you're an FEI steward. You're the chief FEI steward, are you not?
I am an FEI chief steward, but what I am for the USEF, I am the steward general for driving for the USEF. So each federation has its own steward general for its own discipline. So I am the steward general for driving for the United States of America, yes.
Do you get shoulder patches too, David?
No. You just get a little pin to say you're an FEI official. But
I was focusing on the general part. Do people?
The general.
Yes. I need oak leaves. No. The interesting thing was it was probably 7 or 8 years ago when Mr. Pemberton came up to me. He was then chair of the driving committee for the FEI, and said that the FEI were going to instigate the steward program to enhance it more, to make sure that it was discipline specific, because in the early days it was just there was a steward for the driving, for the jumping, that did everything. But of course it has to be discipline specific, because I mean, I couldn't do jumping and a jumping steward couldn't do driving, because they don't understand the harness.
Now,
does that make sense?
Right. Yeah. Now, Wendy and David both, for those that have never competed, what's a steward do at a show?
Well, our mandate is we are there for the safety and welfare of the equines. We don't do anything for the drivers. We're not judges, but we can give yellow cards. apart from the president of the jury, the chief steward is the only other person that can give a yellow card. So basically, we don't do anything for the drivers. That's not our mandate. Our mandate is the safety and welfare of the horses, to make sure that the horses are being treated fairly and correctly and humanely, so that the welfare of the horse is really our mandate. That's our what we do. We're there not to be influenced by anybody else, but to make sure that the horses are given water, that they're kept in clean stables, the stables are big enough, to make sure that the horses are being trained correctly and not with anything illegal, any illegal training methods. To make sure that
if somebody does violate that, then that's where the yellow card, or really a warning, right, comes in.
It's a yellow warning card, but if it's something that's really quite serious, we can report them to the president of the jury, and the president of the jury can ask them to leave.
Okay.
So
does it happen often, David, at shows, that you give out yellow cards?
Not often, but you can go to the website and see the yellow cards that are given out. They're mostly for minor offences. For at the WEG, for instance, one was given to one of the Dutch drivers for incorrect behaviour towards an official. Well, I don't know what he did, but he must have said or done something to one of the officials that pissed them off, and he got a yellow card. But that wouldn't have come from the steward. That would have come from the president of a jury.
You know, when you're swearing at the officials, you have to make sure they don't speak your language.
That's right.
The steward is really important, because I think just them being on the grounds makes people that would normally do things that are not up to standard really, you know, get up there and make sure that they're treating their horses nice and not try to get away with anything. I mean, everybody wants to win, but you have to draw the line with how you're going to get there.
Well, and also being a competitor and having competed, I'm very sympathetic towards the drivers, and I understand that during the heat of the competition, you can get carried away.
Right.
I was the chief steward in Patroni del Vivario in Italy a couple of years ago, the singles championships. And after the six hazards, there was eight obstacles, and between six and seven, there was a loop that they had to drive around through the woods, and several people got a little bit whip happy. And obviously you drive with the whip and you have to encourage the horse with the whip, but sometimes the drivers can't see that the whip is not having any effect. The horse is tired. And so what I would do, part of my mandate was to cut them off between hazards and just pull them up and say, here's a friendly warning, be careful with the whip, you know. So you wouldn't just necessarily give them a yellow card. Because obviously you want the show to go on, but
right.
99.9% of the competitors would say, oh, sorry, 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 and then they kind of pay attention to what they're doing.
Yeah.
But it's not just that. As I say, people just don't think numbers on horses and on carriages, for instance. We have to be able to identify horses and carriages so that we can identify who they belong to. And that's the biggest problem, really. People forget to put their numbers on.
I do that every show.
Well, and I think that's probably going to change eventually, because you'll probably all have microchips and we'll have a gun and we'll be able to just...
Oh, good.
No, when I say a gun, I mean...
Will you give me a warning first before you give me a yellow card? Because I always forget my number.
Is Wendy going to be... Is the horses and the carriages going to be microchipped, or is Wendy going to be microchipped too? I'm just curious.
Well, I said no, just the horses, I think.
Okay, just checking. Wendy was getting a little nervous. She was getting sweaty over there.
Well, you know what? I think the microchipping would be great for, you know, you bring this passport that I do a lot of passports, and you have this drawing. It's not even a photo. You know, my Coggins at least has a photo, and I do all photo Coggins now, but
right.
It would be much better to microchip them. And then when you show up at the jog, you just chip everybody and you know that that's the horse.
Absolutely.
What? Absolutely. So I don't know. Maybe they'll move towards that in the future.
But the stewards are very important, as I say, and we have them at only international competitions. We don't have them at national competitions. We only have them at international competitions mostly because of the expense, because it's another official that has to be not paid, but because officials don't get paid. They have to be, you know, taken care of. But the stewards are very important, and what Wendy said was very true. What happens now is most of the, as a steward general, I designed a program now where we actually test and quantify the stewards, and we've promoted quite a few stewards to the FEI level, and I designed a test for them. There was a test for the problem with the FEI, not the problem, but there's three rule books we have to abide by. There's the general regulations, which apply to all FEI sports. There are the veterinary regulations, which apply to all FEI sports. And then we have our discipline regulations, which only apply to the discipline that we're in, like to driving. So we have to know all three rule books and have to apply all three sets of rules. And it's kind of difficult because you have to be a diplomat, you have to be a politician, and you have to be a policeman. And you try not to be a policeman, you try to be a politician and a diplomat first. So when you go up to someone and say to them, you know, do you know that you shouldn't be doing this and you need to do this and you need to do that? And the majority of people are pretty good. You get a few people that give you a hard time. But as I say, I think I command a certain amount of respect because I've driven for so long, and I'm still a competitor, so I'm coming from a different... I'm not just someone that's been thrown in there, given the job.
Sort of like the queen being in the room?
Absolutely, okay. Absolutely. Yeah. But don't call me a queen, for God's sake.
So, David, when are you coming home from Europe, and what are your future plans for this year?
Well, I'll probably be home towards the end of the summer. I'm waiting to hear from... I was in Australia earlier on this year and did a clinic out there, and they asked me to do... They're having like an Equitana out there. With Boyd XL being the world champion, they're going to do a World Cup thing out there. And somebody asked me to drive four horses because they're looking for drivers that can actually, you know, put it together. Because
and that'll be indoor driving? That'll be indoor cones driving?
Absolutely. And it will be at Equitana, which is in Sydney this year, I think. And, of course, November will be their springtime because it's the opposite end of the world. So I'm hoping to be invited there to be able to do that. And I'm over here because, obviously, as you know, anyone that's lived in Florida, there's not really much going on during the summer. And there's a lot more going on over here. And I think it does help you keep your finger on the pulse when you're over here in Europe, because as much as we like to think we're the center of the world in America, we're not always when it comes to driving. So I'm going to be here for the summer, and I'm doing a few of these traditional drives, and I'm training a few horses for a few people and staying with Henk van der Wiel, the harness maker, and driving a few of his horses. And I'll be back this winter, hopefully back in Florida, and hope to see a few of the snowbirds for lessons either at the Grand Oaks Resort or at Black Prong Driving Center.
Okay, but the important question is the food better in Florida or Belgium?
Belgium.
Okay, just check.
More chocolate.
Let me tell you about the Belgium kitchen. There are two wonderful things in Belgium. Mussels, for instance, because they farm them here, and the mussels are absolutely wonderful. And then there are, of course, Belgian fries. And the wonderful thing about Belgian fries, they fry them twice. Oh. And anyone that likes fried food, if you can fry it twice, it's twice as nice.
And they put all kinds of good stuff on them too, don't they?
They put mayonnaise on their frites, which is wonderful.
Wendy, you have to leave it to
their
me to
diet.
Ask the important questions, okay?
Right. You're right, Glenn.
I'm a guy. I think food all the time. So, David, we have some questions that we ask our guests at the end of every interview. And I have three questions. We'll get three quick answers for you. If you were forced into retirement and you could live anywhere you wanted to, you had all the money in the world, but you had to retire there, where would you live?
In the United States, probably. I've always fancied living in the mountains, actually. So probably somewhere like Montana, Wyoming, somewhere like that, where there was mountains. That's always kind of appealed to me. I always kind of like the wilderness, and it'd be nice to live on my own.
All right. And if you had any car you could drive while you were living there in the mountains, what would it be?
It would probably be a Land Rover. a Land Rover 110. You know, they're galvanized and they're bolted together. So if you dent something, you can unbolt it and bolt another piece on. And it's four-wheel
drive.
You
really are going to be a mountain man.
Yes, he is.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And if you, okay, and you're allowed to have one carriage and you're allowed to have four horses of the same breed, what would the carriage be and what would the breed be?
The carriage would probably be a Dutch-built carriage, a modern carriage, because obviously I'd want something that had some disc brakes on it. So it would probably be a Van den Hervel, which is a Dutch carriage maker. I'd get them to make me probably a wagonette brake or something, a wagonette of some description. And the four horses, whoa, that's tough. They'd probably be Welshmen, actually, Welsh cobs, because Welsh cobs are very hardy. They're very used to living off of very little. And a cob, as you know, is between a horse and a pony. And they don't often get that lame. So they'd probably be Welsh cobs.
Well, that sounds terrific. I want to join him there, Wendy. I'm ready.
I know. That sounds great. That sounds really great. And I love Welsh cobs. So, and mountain men. So I think this sounds perfect. Can I retire there too?
David, you were looking for that offer earlier in the show.
That's right. I know.
I think Wendy's
all right,
volunteering.
Well, I am. I'm volunteering. Well, thank you very much for joining us, David.
Well, thank you very much. Good luck with the driving show. And I think it's been long anticipated and long waited for, something especially for us driving nuts.
Well, David, it was great to have you on. Thank you so much for joining us. It was a pleasure to talk to him again, and we'll definitely have him back. He's such a good guest. He's so much fun.
He is so much fun. I love listening to his stories.
I know, and his accent's great, too.
It is great.
Yeah. You can hear more of the Driving Radio Show at horseradionetwork.com.